Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Well, I think the audience knows that you and I look at Zero Hedge quite frequently.
Sure.
This week he had an interesting article, caught our attention, talked about gold. And it really opens the door for a good discussion about gold and economic policy. The article that they posted came from Ralph Benko, who's been interested in gold over the years. And I've worked with him, even though we don't agree on the same gold standard, both of us recognize the importance of gold. And we will talk a little bit about that. But Benko, in his article, introduces an article and a statement by Stan Sorcher, who was a labor representative. So he most likely was coming, you know, from the left. And but he had an interesting approach to get our attention. We want to do that. And I don't know whether you happen to have seen this chart.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah, if we can pull up this chart, I think it really graphically demonstrates, and Sorcher points out, something happened in the early to mid-1970s. We stopped valuing labor. We stopped valuing the working man. Benko has a different point of view, but you have always talked about a date in the early 70s, and if you look at this chart...
Yeah, I think the chart is very fascinating. It's very dramatic, but you can produce a lot of charts like this. If you wanted to look at debt, you could put debt up there, the size of government, the number of pages of the Federal Register. A lot happened since the early 70s. But I've said it so many times, but to me, August 15th, 1971 was a big, big day in my understanding what was going on, because I had started studying Austrian economics in the 60s and became fascinated, in particular, the explanation that they gave for monetary policy affecting the business cycle. And all through the 60s, you know, I was watching gold carefully, and they were rigging gold. They kept it much lower than the market rate. But the Austrian says it's going to fail, it's going to fail. They never said what date it was going to fail, but it was a friable system that could not last, and that was the Bretton Woods system. It was a pseudo-gold standard, and because they said that as long as we have enough gold and we can honor the gold standard at $35 an ounce, we can do this forever. So sort of like what they're arguing about the dollar standard today. So they kept doing that, but finally the market caught up with them. And the conclusive evidence that the Austrians were right on this was August 15th, and that was the night that Richard Nixon, on a Sunday night, made the announcement that they would close the gold window, which was an admission in many ways of a bankruptcy of the country. We no longer could honor our commitments. People didn't worry about it. They haven't still worried too much about it, but we pay our debt, and we pay our bills with fiat money, money we create out of thin air. But this was dramatic, but ushered in a new age. There were a lot who didn't think it would last very long, but it's lasted for 45 years. The chart that we see there is very important, because wages did this level, didn't go up, and yet productivity went up, and spending went up, GDP went up. And the big question is why this happened. I think there's a monetary explanation for this. Matter of fact, it was another prediction made by Mises when he wrote so much about what was going on in our country. He said that when a country decides through central banking or whatever to devalue the currency by printing too much, inflation, that's inflating the currency, causes a distortion in the economy. Some prices go up and a lot of prices go up, and you just get a lot of malinvestment. You have the business cycle. But he says the one long-term characteristic of debasement of the currency, that is steady eroding value of the dollar, which is what the Fed has done, you know, for 100 years, the steady erosion of the dollar, the worst consequence, he claimed, the economic consequence was the wiping out of the middle class. Mm. So do you think the middle class is very happy today?
Yeah, absolutely not. And, you know, the interesting thing about the chart, and I want to ask you about it, because it does, the reason why it caught our attention is it's so dramatic. There was the crossing of the two and one going completely out of control. But I wonder, why is it that while the wages stayed steady, it seems as if productivity increased dramatically? Are the workers just... working that much harder for less money, or are they dummies, or what does it mean?
Well, I think first some of these charts are deceptive. They're not really telling you real economic growth. It might be an illusion of growth because it's based on debt. You know, if you and I borrow a lot of money and we have fancy cars, it might look like we're very wealthy. But if it's all based on debt, we're not as wealthy. And much of what we have done was an illusion, but the country benefited, especially because what was substituted for Bretton Woods was the dollar standard, the fiat dollar standard, which was even worse than the Bretton Woods. And yet we've been going along, but what we're seeing now is the conclusion of that and the end of that. But what happens is when the Fed creates the money to pay the debt and buy treasury bills and inject money in to protect the banks and bail out big corporations and all, the money supply goes up, which is supposed to stimulate the economy, increase productivity for the working man and give them good jobs. But it doesn't work that way. The money goes into the system in a different way when the government just prints it versus when it comes in under a gold standard. It enters for economic reasons and business decisions. So it goes in, and the people who get the money first do the best. And guess who get the money first?
Wall Street.
the banks and the business corporations, the government, the bureaucrats, they end up getting it. And then when that money circulates, it tends to push prices up. And even though the government will try to tell you, well, there's no inflation here, no inflation, and no big problem, the truth is people's incomes haven't kept up with the productivity. The income nominally has gone up, but what they have are shortage of money because the prices have gone up much faster, and that makes them unhappy. I think it introduces a lot of political problems too, and I think that's what we're witnessing today in the presidential race.
Well, you've always said people sense that something's wrong. They don't quite understand what it is, and I think that's one of the other reasons it's caught our attention, because the whole structure of the article was Ralph Benko correcting what he views as a misperception, and we would agree, of Stan Sorcher. And Sorcher said, well, there was a change in our moral values in the early 70s, and that's kind of an unsatisfying, very subjective view of what happened. Maybe partially true. But then Benko comes through, and he makes a very statement I think you would agree with: the destruction of the gold standard precipitated the death of the American dream. But then he goes on to describe, to correct Sorcher in a way that you would only partially agree
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that's right. Benko is wants to use the gold standard, but you're right in quoting Sorcher, because he wanted to, he said it was moral and personal values and political value, which sets the stage for more government to redistribute wealth and take from one and a welfare distribution probably. My guess is that he probably wouldn't mind what Sanders is doing. It's really go after Wall Street and the people who make money and redistribute it. So, but he doesn't even mention the monetary problem as the monetary system as a problem. But Benko comes in and says, rightfully, there's something wrong with the monetary system. And a gold standard would help, and it would. But the one thing that I have qualms with is that, and he makes this point, but we have to do it right, mm-hmm. because he knows there's different opinions. And like I said, I know Ralph, and we've talked about it, and we debate. But he has always been in the camp of the supply-siders, and what they have advocated is a gold price rule, which probably offers some assistance, because if the price of gold goes up too fast, they know that the monetary system, they're printing too much money. But it's sort of after the fact, after the damage was done. Because if all of a sudden you're printing money and gold in the market stays like this, they're reassured. Well, it must be okay. But what happens when there's a circulation and prices surge upwards? Then you're in a mess. What do? You have to cut back. It's sort of after the fact. But a 100% gold standard, which is something Austrians believe in, and certainly Murray Rothbard talked about it, that you have to have convertibility, and they really believe that you should have instant convertibility, where you're instantly reassured that if you have a certificate that says this is worth 1 ounce of gold, originally it was a $20 bill, mm-hmm. was convertible into a gold. People didn't carry their gold around, but they always, if they got worried about it, they'd turn it in and get their gold coin about it. And so there is a big difference here between the pseudo gold standard and a real gold standard. But Benko actually puts a good spin on this, because it's sort of like the supply siders and I support their positions when they want to cut taxes. You know, cutting taxes is very good. You know, reduce rates, and that's a salvation of the economy. But their argument is, and what they're hoping for, is it increases revenues. And I say there's only one thing to do when you increase revenues: you cut more taxes, you cut more spending. But here, Ralph argues the case that if we do go to this gold standard, there's so much money out there, there would be so much stimulation to the economy, and he comes up, I'd sort of like to see the calculation, that there's $6 trillion worth of taxes that all of a sudden will roll in, and the government will be able to spend this on whatever. Maybe even military, increase the money in the military. There's a bunch of people who like to do this. And he said we wouldn't even have to raise rates. We wouldn't have to do it. But the government will be flooded with money by merely going to this other standard. I think that under the true gold standard, the economy is going to thrive. But the purpose is for the people to benefit, to make sure the working class people get the money and the purchasing power goes up, and that you don't have a central economic planning. And I think that would be the answer, rather than saying, well, this is a boondoggle for the government. Yeah. We're not advocating that.
Yeah, that's a philosophical difference. And I understand that Benko is making an appeal to progressives. And so I think he flavors his argument in a way that would appeal to progressives. But there's more than a little progressivism in his own argument, which is that the government would have so much more money to pass around. And if the Austrian argument is the government does not have the ability to pass it around in an efficient way. But, you know, the other advantage would be to progressives would be the gold standard would reduce the welfare, the warfare state. And I think that would appeal to many progressives, because you would have to pay for your wars. You couldn't put them onto the next generation or inflate them away. The problem would be for the progressives, of course, that it would also hurt the welfare state, which is centralized in control of the federal and state governments. And so they have that pot of money. But, you know, it sort of reflects a view of society that man is inherently evil and would never give to his neighbor unless the government was holding a gun in its hand.
They have their hands out.
But, you know, I was going to say, Dr. Paul, we've had floods down here over the past week or so. And I can say, just from a personal standpoint, you know, we had problems in our house. Our neighbors didn't hesitate for a second to offer us anything to help us out. And that's how people are. Look at when there's a tragedy here in the U.S., people immediately open their checkbooks.
Wasn't FEMA knocking on your door wanting to help you?
FEMA wasn't there, but our neighbors were.
Remember how long our constituents complained about getting the assistance from FEMA? Months, you know.
Yeah, we'd rather stay flooded than have FEMA. Yeah.
But, you know, I think this issue of appealing to the working class, it is a populist approach. So libertarianism, I think, when it's dealt with correctly, does get people in the middle class and the working class to get excited, but that's quite a bit different than an authoritarian approach to populism, where you literally force money going from one pocket to another. You know, Samuel Gompers, the great labor leader that during the Industrial Revolution, he was a strong supporter of the gold standard. He thought it protected the working class people, because there's nothing worse than eroding the value of the currency, because it is a tax, and it's a vicious tax. It's an invisible tax. It's hard to identify. And some people will say, you know, it's unfair. Give me more money. I don't have enough money. Instead of saying, I want money that has real value, that you can't steal from me. It's a taxation. You know, they tax us outwardly. But right now, you know, a lot of people don't pay income tax. They pay Social Security tax, but they don't pay income tax. But they still suffer. More so because when you see this, real wages aren't going up. But there, if you add in there the sales taxes and different things with prices on products, percentage-wise, they suffer a lot more than a billionaire on Wall Street. They don't care what a loaf of bread costs. But a person living on the margin, it's very, very difficult. So monetary policy is key. I think this article is good that it calls attention to it. But I do think, and Benko invites people and knows that we're going to have a discussion about this. And we want to get it right. I want to get it right, too. There's also the other thing to deal with is, can you move in a certain direction without getting everything that you want? And if you're working with progressives, if you can get to work with progressives and say that we're going to cut the spending out of these senseless wars without, eliminating food stamps totally and completely in one day, which doesn't make any sense, I think we should. But the whole problem is what we're facing is going to be cataclysmic. You're not going to have a chance to plan and sort it out and cut back overseas. And the people who have the most clout and the most authoritarian, who can scare the people the most, are people going to be more frightened of ISIS, or are they going to be more frightened about what their paycheck pays? And there's going to be a lot of fear out there. And it's being held in here. But not many people are out there saying, that's why this was a good article. At least they're saying, well, maybe more people should talk about it. And I think Benko indicated that the Republicans are thinking more about it. I guess that remains to be seen. Do you think you've heard more from your Republican allies?
My allies. Well, he did say the GOP is beginning to come around to the gold standard. And I mentioned that to you, and you said, well, I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
You're not sure, but there has been a lot more written about it lately, which is encouraging.
Well, I'll tell you what really brings people around to monetary reform. It's good that we have people in the intellectual community discussing this and planning it. But ultimately, what happens is they're forced to do it. The money quits working. It's like in Zimbabwe, they have to quit and do something different. And that is what will happen here. You'll have to stop. If you want to preserve what we have, you have to just stop printing money. You have to stop the spending. And there's no mood in this country for this right now. There's too much support for free stuff, and there's too much support for war stuff. And nobody's worried enough about the nature of money and why gold is important, because the most important role, or at least one of the close to the most important role, it restrains the government. It restrains the government's ability to print money and do all the things that they're not supposed to be doing. That is the day that we should work for, and the reforms will mean not only monetary reforms, it will be reforming the nature of government. We have to decide what should the role of government be, and certainly we have a challenge there, because the role of government that we're facing today is totally out of control. And my suggestion has always been, look at Article 1, Section 8, and only do the things that we're authorized to do in our government, and we might get a good start in going in the right direction. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.